Happy New Year. Feliz Nuevo Año. Akimashite omedetou gozaimasu. Shin nien kwaila. Whatever language you speak, those four languages cover most of the listeners in the 63 countries that this podcast has been heard in since I started this shorter podcast in October. I am pleased to be starting season two in a new decade with two great guests. Today, Daniel Jimenez, ex-SQM, and currently running his own consulting and advisory company, and Jingwen Sun, who is one of the top analysts in China. And for anybody who listens to the Global Lithium podcast or reads my writings on LinkedIn, you're certainly aware of Jingwen because I've mentioned him many, many times before as one of my go-to information sources when I can't make it over to China or I want to corroborate information I receive from other sources. I quite often go to Jingwen for his perspective. We're going to begin with Daniel's thoughts on 2020. And after he speaks, I will come back on and give some perspective on Daniel's thoughts. And then we'll follow that with Jingwen's thoughts on where he sees China in 2020. When I have really good guests, I don't really need to say as much as I normally do when I'm carrying the whole podcast. So without further ado, let's hear from Daniel and his views on 2020.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. Happy 2020. Joe has asked me to give him my view about the lithium market for 2020. And before entering to that, I would like to say that I am convinced that by 2025, so in 5 or 6 years from now, demand for lithium is going to triple from the levels it has today. And this means that additional supply is needed for that moment, and that supply, investment decisions for that supply need to be made today. If that doesn't happen, we will probably not be able to meet demand, and if that's the case, we could again see prices going to unreasonable high levels. Looking now into 2020, on the demand side, demand should grow at reasonable good rates, probably 40 to 60,000 metric tons of LCE, which is a big spread, but the driver here would clearly be Europe and its deployment of electric vehicles. The question mark here is China and whether China is going to recover or go back to the growth rates we saw until the first half of 2019. I'm hearing that this recovery might not come that quickly and that this could slow down the growth in 2020. To me, this is the biggest question mark, and we'll have to monitor that very, very closely. Now, when we look at the supply side, we have to start first with looking at what happened in 2019, in which supply clearly exceeded demand by at least 80,000 metric tons. If we add that to the 30 to 40,000 metric tons of excess supply in 2018, we have a stock accumulation over the last 2 years of at least 100,000 tons of LCE. So with this in mind, it would be like evident to believe that this oversupply will be consumed or partially consumed in 2020, meaning that the requirements for additional for fresh production will be less. And my estimate is that in order for the market to reach a balance for 2020, production in 2020 needs to be around 70,000 tons less than in 2019. This is 70,000 tons. Where is this reduction going to come from? low-cost producers like SQM and have expressed just the contrary, they're going to produce more. Talison, on the other hand, has just completed an expansion of a production line, meaning they will have new capacity. Is Talison going to use it? I don't know, but I would presume they would. So that doesn't help to the overall production decrease in 2020. And so this decrease will have to come from higher cost producers. We have seen already Alita announcing or basically stopping production. We've seen Galaxy announcing reduction in their output. Pilbara has done the same, but on the aggregate, I don't think the numbers they have provided are sufficient to say that they're going to supply in 2020 less than in 2019. So basically, who is left? Somebody has to come in and stop production, and this will probably come driven by having no choice than to stop production because of low prices. And that will probably happen once prices drop and drop to levels which probably be below $6, maybe even below $5. And here the candidates are evidently Chinese mineral producers as well as Australian mineral producers, which combined with the China refining are the higher cost producer today. Now, my guess is that there will be some companies going belly up, and because of that, that we will see that production stopping. But this at the same time will be a relief to the rest of the market and will probably at least change the sentiment of where the prices are going. If that is to happen, I would also see that that will define the moment in which prices have reached the bottom. I see lower cost brine producers like SQM, Albemarle, Orocobre, as well as Talison, Livent, of course, in a, I wouldn't say comfortable position, but they will be able to ride this wave with no major problems, and the struggles here will be with the Australian minerals and Chinese mineral producers. And not to forget also Chinese refiners who also have invested heavily and today are in a situation where they're not able to sell because they're basically an oversupply. So they're also in a, some of them in a complicated financial position. There are bargains today, or there will be bargains to buy, acquire assets over the next year. That is clear. And when we keep the long-term view in mind, it will probably be the best moment to buy assets and to have them operational by 2023, 25, when that capacity is required. Finally, on the prices and where we could see prices, I see prices, as I said earlier, in 2020 reaching bottom, probably during the first half of 2020 at levels below six. For 2021 and 22, we should see a recovery of prices to price levels which will be dancing around what marginal cost of productions are, which will be probably in the $7 to $9 range, because that capacity today exists and it needs to be operated. But we also know that by 2023, maybe to end of 2022, we will need additional capacity. And that capacity, in order to be put in place, needs price levels of 8 to 11, which is a price in which you can get a reasonable payback for your investments, and depending on the asset you're talking about. And whether we're going to see those price levels in 2023 will largely depend on if that capacity is installed, and this capacity needs to be deployed during 2020, 21, 22. And this will largely depend on investment, if the investment is there. If that investment is not there, we'll probably see again a price boom by 2023. if the investment comes, again, we could see these levels of $8 to $11 for period 23, 25 and beyond. So that in re with regards to the lithium market 2020, Joe asked me also to comment about the recent ruling about of the environmental court here in Chile and how that affected SQM's business. My view is that in the short term this will have no significant effect. It might have some effect in the long term, but I think there's still a lot of legal proceedings to go on. At the end of the day, my impression is that this has nothing to do with environmental effects. As a matter of fact, SQM had reached an agreement with the environmental authority and on a compliance program, so by which all the environmental concerns were addressed and agreed by the environmental authority. This ruling is the consequence of the case being brought to court by the indigenous communities who, under the pretext of environmental things, are probably looking for a way to participate in a bigger share of the business which is generated by the lithium in the Salar de Atacama. So I think this is still something which might or will evolve over time, and I'm not that pessimistic of how this is going to end. So with this, thank you very much for listening, and again, I wish you a happy 2020, and we will see market recovering. We will see the good times again very soon. Have a good year.
Thanks again for your thoughts, Daniel. Always good to get the perspective of someone who has deep industry experience. I thought maybe Daniel and I would have a little bit more disagreement on the future, but from a big picture perspective, we're pretty consistent on where we see demand in 2025. And the fact that, we see 2020 as a tough year and, pricing has not yet bottomed with, I believe it'll bottom in 2020. Probably once it bottoms, it will hold on that bottom or near that bottom for some time. But by 2021, I see things going, starting to go north. Daniel may think that comes a little later. But again, disagreeing on the fine points is pretty well expected. I just want to again express my appreciation. It's been good since Daniel left SQM and started out on his own to touch base with him on a regular basis. And so now we'll transition from Daniel's thoughts coming from Chile to Jingwen Sun's thoughts coming from China. He focuses on the China situation for 2020. He is quite brief. And listen carefully because there's a lot to understand in a short period of time, and Jingwen does a good job of being crisp. So with that, without further ado, I leave you with Jingwen's thoughts.
Hello, my name is Jingwen Sun, the lithium industry analyst at Minmetals Securities. The year of 2019 was really tough for lithium industry both in China and around the world. And I have summarized the following 4 points to share some of my thoughts about lithium. Firstly, the most important factor behind the sharp decline, we can see the cyclical correction of the lithium price, was the EV battery demand in China. If you look back, the lithium boom from 2015 to 2018 was primarily driven by the high growth rate of China EV demand. It is now in a critical transition period into a new cycle. However, due to the gradual phasing out of EV subsidies and the limited number of the competitive EV models, it eventually led to the debubbling of the whole EV supply chain, hence depressing the upstream lithium prices in China. Secondly, for the past 2019, we can hardly ignore the structural changes happened on the supply side. On the one hand, top-tier lithium chemical makers made a large step forward, by securing long-term contracts with multiple global leading OEMs, such as BMW and Tesla, in addition to those existing supply agreements signed with leading battery makers. Certainly, we believe 2020 will be tough but full of hope. We are currently at the bottom of the lithium industry cycle, and the lithium spot price has fallen back to the level of 2015. However, Tesla's factory in Shanghai and new EV models coming online from China domestic and global OEMs are likely to drive the lithium demand back into expansion. A more positive demand outlook is likely to lead to the recovery of inventory in the entire lithium-ion battery supply chain for the second half of next year. Fourth, the reshuffle and diverge of lithium industry will continue. Strategy and the market positioning really matters for lithium producers in next year. We believe there are two kinds of producers will finally win. The first one is those who is able to follow the high-end strategy, especially those leading hydroxide makers who secure long-term contracts with global leading OEMs and batteries. They can get a reasonable premium for the high-quality product they sold on the global market. The second one is those who follow the low-cost strategy. We believe there will be a large pie in the cost-sensitive lithium-ion phosphate battery market next year for them to explore. After all, 2020 will be a year with a lot to be watched. Let's welcome a brand new chapter for the global lithium industry and the global EV supply chain.
Thank you, Jingwen. I like the phrase for 2020 in China, tough but full of hope. And I think we're all hopeful that China gets back on the EV growth train, and I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. I mean, I know there's been a lot of discussion about the ending of certain subsidies and the cutting back of others, but you know, China has always done a really good job with policy, and I think people need to transition away from the word subsidy to the word policy, because China has a lot of levers they can use to bring about the behaviors that they want to see. And, you know, making the EV industry and the battery industry strong is certainly a goal. And I certainly believe that it's not just about what subsidies are or what subsidies aren't. I believe it's what the overall policy towards the sector is. And as I said, there's more than one way to do that. And China's probably the best in the world at finding ways to get the populace to do what the government would like them to do. So I'm fairly confident that you're going to see a turnaround in China in 2020. But like many others, I'm really interested to see in 2020 what happens in Europe from the EVs. And the EV, you know, how many EV models actually sell well. You've got policy on the part of the EU influencing this. And I know I am certainly not the only voice saying that 2020 is probably the year when we spend a lot more time talking about what's going on in Europe. My point on lithium would be, at least for now, the growth of EVs in Europe is still an Asia lithium demand story, because most of the cathode for now will continue to be made in Asia. I think over time we'll see supply chains migrate more towards a regional bias, but that is not currently happening. And so even though you're going to have the Northvolts of the world and, you know, some big battery factory projects in Europe, initially, as is true with the Gigafactory that Tesla built in Nevada, the cathode's still made in Asia, and that will play out for a while. And, you know, we'll just continue to follow it and see when that changes. So we are, as I record this, my wife and I are getting ready to go to a New Year's Eve party, but for most of my audience, it is actually already the new year. So by the time you hear this, it will be 2020. And, you know, I'd just like to kind of go over the big four lithium companies. And, you know, it was a tough year for Albemarle. You know, poor Luke just can't seem to change his strategy at the right time. And, you know, the whole thing with Wodgina and the excessive investment there. And then the day basically you finalize it, you also announce that you're not going to operate the asset for a while. So, you know, Albemarle just seems to keep shooting itself in the foot despite having two of the best assets in brine and hard rock on the planet. But I'm hopeful that maybe in time there'll be a management change at Albemarle and they will get on a more clear strategic path. Because if you just go back and listen to the last 8 earnings calls, and I know that would be painful to do, but if you were to do that, you would see that Albemarle changes their strategy and tactics on pretty much a quarterly basis. And, you know, that's never really worked for anybody. It's great to be flexible on one hand and agile in thinking, but I don't think either one of those terms applies to Albemarle at this point. So, again, two great assets. And as long as they hold on to those assets, they're going to do okay to fine in the future, as long as they don't continue to misallocate capital. SQM, again, we ended the year with more drama with this environmental thing, and Daniel gave his thoughts on that. You know, I may think there's more of an issue there than Daniel does, but again, you know, time will tell. I think what they're doing now on pricing borders a little bit on irresponsible from an industry standpoint. But you know, that again, they can do it. They have the cost position to do it. I think though, you know, price goes down really easily. It doesn't always come up as easily. And I think in SQM's case, if you follow me on LinkedIn, you saw a post I did a couple of days ago that really shows that, you know, SQM's battery quality mix isn't great. I mean, they need to do a lot of work. And actually, one of the R&D guys from SQM took me to task, which I'm sure he was censured for afterwards, because SQM does not really like its employees to comment on social media. But he basically said, well, wouldn't you rather us have the position we have than that of a Canadian junior, which I thought was a little disingenuous. But anyway, as I've said many times, I own SQM shares. I still do. I have trimmed my position a bit, but they do have a great resource, but they also have a lot of challenges going forward. And, you know, if you've watched what they've said they were going to do expansion-wise and what the results have been, it hasn't been great performance. And so we'll keep watching that in 2020. And again, the world is better off with a strong SQM from the standpoint of ultimately the Atacama as a resource is very necessary to the future of the lithium industry. As far as Tianqi goes, you know, they had a kind of a tough 2022, had, you know, a loss-making quarter, and the interest payments on the on the acquisition of the SQM shares are very punitive right now. And, you know, with price in China as low as it is, and with most of Tianqi's business being in China, they've taken that hit. And probably the big thing for 2020 is for them to get Kwinana operating and making quality product, and hopefully they can do that. But again, I don't see that as, we may not even know at the end of 2020 how that's going to play out, because I think it's that startup's going to take time, and with the huge capital overruns they've had and the fact that they've had to scale back their at least near-term vision on where they wanted to go in WA. Let's see what happens. And that leads me to my favorite of the big four, and that would be Gangfen. And, you know, Gangfen, as we heard recently on the last version of my podcast from Mac Whale, you know, Gangfen did very well from an equity perspective. Their stock did very well, and now they are number two capacity wise. And ultimately, I think they will wind up being number one before too many years pass on a capacity basis. Gangfen is the one company of the big four that has avoided thus far the big misstep. And, you know, I'll make one other comment. I mean, Gangfen really benefited from SQM bailing on Kachari because, I think right now, if you take a really objective look at SQM's position, they would really do well to be diversified in South America outside of Chile. And in with the deal they made with Gangfen, that Gangfen's, you know, taken up that partnership with Lithium Americas at Kachari. And that is probably one of the bright spots in South America. The construction's going well. And, you know, we're not going to have startup in 2020. We'll have startup really early in 2021. So we'll keep following that. But the other piece on SQM is that now in Western Australia, they have a partner in Wesfarmers who took out Kidman. You know, Wesfarmers is a huge company. They have chemical experience. And, you know, Kidman was kind of a paper company that stumbled on an asset, and they weren't going to cause SQM. You know, SQM was just going to get to do whatever they wanted to do on that project. And now with a very, very strong partner, like a Wesfarmers, you know, I mean, SQM obviously is no longer the boss of that project. Wesfarmers is the home team in WA. I wish Wesfarmers the best. I've met some of their guys. You know, I like the way they think, but I think if you're looking at SQM's kind of global position, they've never been super great at partnerships. And I think at the end of the day, they aren't really going to be running the one in WA. The covalent JV, I think, will be more under the influence of Wesfarmers long term. So with that, I got to go take my icebreaker and exchange it for a tux for a party tonight. And I am going to say that I'm really, really thankful, even though 2020 was a tough year. It was a tough year for lithium companies. It was a tough year for my business. But, you know, tough is a relative term, and I'm still much better off at Global Lithium than I was at FMC Lithium, both from an enjoyment and a financial perspective. So even though 2019 was a down year from the last 2 years, I'm just moving down with all my friends in the industry, or most of my friends in the industry, in terms of, you know, we have good years, we have bad years. You know, I want to thank everybody who was a guest on the Global Lithium podcast and on Global Lithium Q&A. Those podcasts were successful simply because we were able to get great guests, and, you know, they shared their time and wisdom. And it, again, like as you've heard today, you know, I had two of the good ones on today. And people continue to ask me, what is the status of the Global Lithium podcast, the original one? And I have to say, at this point, I actually am not sure myself. I'm going to do this podcast for sure. I'm going to start another one called Global Lithium Presents that will be a long form. And that was, the idea there was it'll be a little different format than the long form Global Lithium podcast. But I have not completely written off the idea of doing more episodes of the Global Lithium podcast. It's just at this point in time, I'm not sure if and when that happens in 2020. So I can't give you a clear answer, listeners. I haven't really heard, I've gotten more positive email about the short podcast, and I have a questioning email about the status of the Global Lithium podcast. And I guess I have to read something into that too. So if any of you have thoughts, feel free to share them with me. You can leave messages for me on the Anchor platform. Will come directly to me. Most people that are have any social media savvy know how to get a hold of me. Or you can, if you know my email address, you can email me. But so with that, I'm looking forward to the new decade. It's going to be an interesting one, and I honestly believe the coming decade will be the decade of lithium after a very rocky 2020 start. And as I always said on the Global Lithium podcast, with that, I will say good night and good luck.